Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, hello once again and welcome to another edition of Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. My name is Tim Nicholson and I am super excited to have your company today here on the radio. Very big thanks, as always, to Pete Dillon for Cravings. He'll be back next week with more delicious news about food and wine and all of those kind of things. But for the next 55 minutes, you've got us and we're going to talk lots of car stuff. So sit back, relax and enjoy. And I am here in the studio with two wonderful human beings, starting with Mike Costello. Hello.
Delicious news. I see what you did there, Tim. See, I liked it. It was good.
Food show.
Scrumptious. Kicking it off on a high note.
I know. Is it a high note?
Wow.
I don't know what it is.
How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm really, really well. I'm looking outside at a blue sky and it's been a while since I've seen one of those. I don't really know what to make of it.
Did you freak out a little bit?
A little bit. It was one of, we were talking before, it was that day where you could almost get away with wearing shorts. Mm. But the idea of wearing shorts is just kind of, yeah.
We are not ready for it here in Victoria yet, but wherever you are, let's hope you are wearing shorts and let's hope you've got fabulous legs wherever you are as well. We are also joined by a very good friend of Fender Bender. I'm talking about the wonderful Fian Tor. Hello!
Good to be back.
Good to have you. It's been a little while.
It's been a long while.
Yeah, well, you know, where have you been? Have you been trying to avoid us? Is that it?
I've been working on my beautiful
I have tried
legs.
To call you have so you? Many times and you've just been ignoring us.
Yeah, do you
Busy. Well, I was actually in Japan with you, Tim.
That's correct. Which we might have a little bit of a chat about later.
A little
later.
Bit of a romantic getaway, boys.
It was a little bit of a romantic getaway. Yeah. There was some beer purchased from convenience stores walking on the street.
Nothing more romantic than a date that involves beer from a convenience store. Did you go to one of the beer vending machines? They give you the big Sapporo cans in the vending machines.
We were a little bit afraid of the vending machines, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think we ventured.
Just look
there.
Around the used underwear and find the beer ones.
Oh, yeah, no, those ones were fine. Yeah, yeah.
We tried to put some in there, but it didn't work.
That's not how you load them, Tim.
Damn it! And you were
one
it wrong.
Way.
Foolish. Now, we've got lots coming up on the show today. We're going to talk about brands coming up in emerging markets and looking at kind of safety standards and what's happening there. I think, Mike, you're going to have a bit of a chat about a couple of the hot-ish hatches. Calling them hot hatches?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of. You know,
you call them warm hatches?
If you want a hot hatch but you don't want to be seen in a Golf GTR like everybody else, you do have options and I'm going to talk about what they are.
Which is very exciting a little bit later on. And lots more to come as well. I'll say that again six times. We have quite a bit of news to get through this week, so we will kick it off with the biggest reveal of some time, I would suggest, and that is finally, after months of teasing, those dirty Swedes. No, not dirty. That's a terrible thing to say. Those teasing Swedes have finally shown us the new XC90.
You know, I normally like it when Swedish people tease.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, they're Swedish people. What's
Where's
not to
bad?
Like about a bit of teasing?
They do it well.
In this case, it's been, and for such a safety first company, Volvo has been playing it really on the edge with this one. Mm. They've been revealing the car slowly, piecemeal, bit by bit, which really
too
irks
slowly.
Me. But and the problem is when a car company does a month long, 2 month long, or even 3 month long in this case, teaser campaign where they show you snippets of a car and bits of information here and there to build suspense. Mm. When they reveal the thing finally, you're kind of burnt out. You're kind of over it, you know. And this is a car that is absolutely vital to the survival of Volvo.
Yeah.
It's, you know, for 12 years, they've been selling the same XC90, which is their big prestige flagship SUV, and is ancient now compared to its rivals.
Yeah, one of the oldest cars on the roads, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And this one is all important. If this car flops, the company probably flops as well. And they want to hope to have done a good job. And thankfully, on first impression, despite the perhaps the hype that was built up, it does look pretty great. It looks, it plays it safe, but it's pretty stylish, I think.
Yeah.
For that kind of car.
A little bit X5-y at the front, I feel like.
There's a bit of Volkswagen Touareg about the rear as well, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they've borrowed a few little design cues here and there and just put a little bit of Swedish nuances in there.
Totally. It does precisely what a Volvo SUV needs to do, which it moves the safety game forward. Volvo is the safety company, and the problem Volvo has is that every other company is obsessed with safety now as well.
Yeah.
Companies like Mercedes that have a lot more money to spend than Volvo does. So Volvo's got a challenge. It looks like it's delivered with this car. It's got some crazy safety features. If it senses that you've just veered off the road a little bit, it automatically pre-tenses all the seat belts because it anticipates you might lose it. It can stop at intersections now, not just at cars in front of it. I watched a video of this thing flipping over three times and then landing back on its wheels again, and it was hardly even dented at all.
Yeah.
The 60-kilometre-an-hour frontal crash that it did, the body shell didn't even change a little bit. Yeah. It looks like the safest car money can buy, which is what it has to be.
Yep.
So it in totally that sense, does. They've done pretty well.
And they say that they try and bring in whatever latest safety technology they've kind of developed, discovered, whatever, they'll put it in whatever car is next off the, you know, bat for them. So they're not going to wait for like a big flagship car. They're just going to go, well, it's going to be in this car, and that's what happens. So it'll be really interesting to see how it stacks up, because obviously BMW kind of owns that luxury segment, the SUV segment. Range Rover's doing really well. I think the Range Rover Sport's selling like hotcakes here at the moment. So it's going to it's coming into a pretty hot segment.
And on that topic, if you're wondering what's an XC90, it's a huge, big four-wheel drive SUV. It's got seven seats and, it can sort of, you know, monster truck crush other cars in its way if you need that sort of facility.
Or it can look impressive in a Toorak school car park.
Ooh, that too.
Which is where 99% of them spend their time with yoga mats rolled up in
and
the back.
And it might be very expensive too. There's a couple of first, what was it, 1,927 initial editions are coming out.
So Volvo was formed in 1927, so they launched 1,927 special edition ones, and they're going to be 120 grand, which is steep for a Volvo.
That's huge, right? That's got to be the most expensive Volvo in some time.
Oh, yeah, ever.
Surely.
Could argue, that the new Patrol's similar sort of money for the top end. You could go, well, you know.
And you'd argue that that would be a bit more capable off-road. So anyway,
that's true.
It depends what you're after, but...
expensive SUVs.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Now, at the other end of the SUV scale, another reveal this week, which I'm a little bit excited about.
I called this one.
You
I'm
did.
Proud to say.
You
I did,
did
call this one.
What does that mean, you called it?
Well, I predicted this months ago and it happened, and I have been
in
vindicated, Fiantor. I have been vindicated.
Yep. We are talking, of course. I mean, what could we be? What else could we be talking about? Suzuki is bringing back the Vitara, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. So Suzuki has finally realised that when you have badge cachet on a certain car, you need to keep it. Mm. They lost the Vitara. The Vitara was a famous nameplate. They are bringing it back.
Yep.
However, I have a bone of contention with Suzuki because they released a concept car about a year ago or so of a little concept SUV called the iV4. Mm. And they said, this car... we'll basically produce it looking like this concept car, and it will be our new SUV. And that was the car we thought would be Vitara. They have released the production version, and it's so ridiculously watered down, it's not even funny.
Hmm.
It looked great as a concept, and now it looks so boring.
It looks about 2 years old already.
Suzuki has just... Yeah, and the worst thing is, I've spoken to Suzuki executives who've told me that this, you know, they couldn't say much about the car itself before it was revealed, but this was the style-oriented car in the range. So Suzuki's got quite a boring range. The Swift is really great, but everything else is a bit dull. Mm. It's not bad, but it's just kind of
the
plain.
The S-Cross looks weird.
It's plain, exactly. And this was going to be their style car. It was going to be the one to get the young audience into the brand. If this is the best they can do as far as style's concerned, well, Suzuki has really dropped the ball.
Look, I think it's kept most of the shape of that thing, but all of the kind of cool front-end design and the tail, well, we haven't seen the tail yet, have we? It certainly has gone. But look, I'm just too excited about the fact that they've brought back Vitara.
It doesn't matter what it looks like. It's the Vitara.
And you've got to give credit to Suzuki. Like this, at the moment, the small SUV market is the market. It's the biggest market in Australia behind only small cars like the Corolla and 3. It's dominating. It's the fastest growing. Everybody's getting into it. Suzuki was a pioneer. The Vitara was around before anybody else was doing that kind of car. And it's back. And so that name alone is going to get it some traction.
I think so too.
I mean, how many people... I knew heaps of people that had Vitaras when I was growing up.
My ex-boyfriend had a Vitara that he was obsessed with. He had the canvas roofed version.
Oh, God.
Which was...
Did it leak?
Hilarious. Well, he didn't let me drive it for some insane reason. Chris, if you're listening, thank you for that. But
come
it was
on,
a terrific little car. They were really reliable. They'll last forever, those things. I think Suzuki's pretty reliable in general, though, isn't it?
they're not too bad. Yeah.
But it's interesting you say about the badge cachet kind of thing, because they're ditching the Alto, which I think is a great name for a car.
Yeah.
Lift like, you up. And they're pronouncing it with a celery. Sorry, the Celerio.
Celerio.
Celeriac.
Yeah, yes. That's what you think. Like, yeah. And it's a little bit dowdy looking, this new... I don't know. They make gains in some areas and then they...
Well, this is a rant in general, is car makers who throw away great names.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's true.
No, it's ridiculous. But people are used to certain names. Don't get rid of them.
Yeah.
We do see some coming back too, though.
It's just Mark, but they're only coming back because someone got rid of them in the first place. Yeah. It's marketing companies standing in the way thinking they know best.
Yeah.
When really they don't. I charge too much.
You know what I've decided? Yeah. I think Nissan should bring back the Tita. No, I'm kidding.
And have Kim Cattrall in the ads again.
Oh, God, yeah.
Does she have a walking frame now?
And still hot.
She is, actually. I was watching Sex and the City last night. Wow, I'm gay.
Really? Just a little bit?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Great show.
It was between the football.
Which
football
episode?
And Sex and
the
City.
Oh, no, we're talking about cars,
so. Yeah, sorry.
And we're on Joy. We don't tolerate that kind of behaviour.
Exactly. It's outrageous.
What are you doing?
Now, I don't know if you saw this, guys. It's actually from a few years ago. This dude who ploughed a Bugatti Veyron.
He ploughed a Bugatti Veyron. That's inappropriate,
ploughed
Tim.
It good.
Is this PG friendly? This is a
probably
Saturday
not.
Afternoon. Come on.
No, he ploughed his Bugatti Veyron. Sorry, I should have chosen another word, shouldn't I? Into like the ocean or a big lake or something like that.
A
I
body
think,
of
in
water,
but some kind of body of water.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't Keith Moon style driving it into a swimming pool, because that would have been badass.
That would have been awesome. No, so apparently he claimed that. So I think he was a bit of an exotic car dealer or something like
this
that.
This is $1 million car, everybody. Yeah. This is very expensive.
And
he paid $1 million.
This is the car.
Yeah,
of
it's fastest
cars.
Car.
What Volkswagen developed?
You think a Ferrari's good? Yeah, This is like 10 Ferraris. Mm. This is the car.
And up until recently, I think the fastest production car on the planet.
Still. Yeah. Still,
oh, I thought
that stupid Hennessy thing.
They didn't get the Guinness guys in to do it yet.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, so it's still technically it's still the fastest
Bugatti's
car on the planet.
Numero uno.
Well, this dude paid a million US dollars for it, and claimed that he crashed it into said body of water because there was a low flying pelican that he had to avoid. Mm-hmm. Anyway, video has been revealed of a guy, you know, videoing him going, "Oh, I want that car one day," and watching him go into the water. There is no pelican.
So he had it insured for like a couple of mil, wasn't it? So it was all insurance.
I think more, like 4 million.
Yeah, it was an insurance scam. He had it insured for a lot. He drove it into a lake. There was a pelican, and then there was a witness who said, "No, dude, you just intentionally drove it into the lake." Now he's facing up to 20 years.
Don't you love that?
Wow.
In jail for insurance fraud.
You can kill someone because, and go to jail for less than
that. Yes, but the Americans love big business, and an insurance company has lots of powerful lawyers.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
So why did it take so long for this video to come out? It's only taken 5 years.
Well, this is the thing. It was 2009 that this all happened. I don't know. Maybe they couldn't release it because of legal issues.
Maybe the guy with the video went to the owner and said, "I'll release this unless you give me $30,000.
Oh!
And he went, "No, never." And then all of a sudden...
Yeah, I like how you're making up an entire story.
I love it.
Just going at like $30,000.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking for a job in, New Weekly, so just embellishing the story a little bit here.
Hired.
I think you could work at New Weekly.
Hired.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We've got lots more coming up on Fender Bender just around the corner. Make sure you stick around.
Joy 94.9. Australia's best radio station.
That's correct. It is the best. It's official because they just said it. So,
we agree.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yes.
So a few other things that have happened this week, guys. Have you seen this amazing, amazing, amazing Mercedes-Benz Sprinter / Brabus Business Lounge?
I call it the party wagon.
Well, partying business style.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, this is this ridiculous, ridiculous thing. It's a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van that has been completely pimped out for, you know, high-end business meetings. We've got leather seats. You've got a coffee maker.
Fridges,
does look a
fold-out tables.
Yeah.
Everything.
And blacked-out windows. It kind of does look a little bit organised crime.
Massively.
Yeah.
That's why we all want it.
Yeah. And they won't tell us the price.
Because we want to roll gangster style.
Yeah.
Every time I go to an international motor show, the first thing I do is go to the Brabus stand.
Yeah,
because it's insane. They've got like six-wheeled G-Wagons and S-classes with bulletproof cladding. And they're just... It's basically like they just grab a Mercedes and just spend millions of dollars making it as absurd as possible.
Well, it's even got... folding ottomans as well, so you can, you know, recline and That's just
It's funny though, because it's going to depend on the road that you're on as well, isn't it? Like, it might not be that comfortable.
Where does the seatbelt go when you're fully reclined in the ottoman position?
It's like when, you know, you just have a, you know, little blankie on, and then you just wrap the lap. It's like a little lap like system.
No, but I think it's a what do you call it? Not the lap sash, the other one.
Oh.
Seatbelts. But
it's a 6-point racing harness.
Yeah, exactly. I would happily sit in it, but we don't know how much it costs, and we probably won't see it in Australia.
Bazillions.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's very cool, though.
Guys, I'm a bit confused. Is Saab still going or what?
I don't know. Why do you ask me so many questions?
It's God. I'm going to say maybe.
I think it's maybe still going. Mm.
Look, Saab's a weird one, isn't it? Because it's been bought by a Chinese conglomerate to be turned into an electric vehicle company. It sort of isn't really going anywhere.
It's had more comebacks than Johnny Farnham.
Listen to him.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
It's true.
Don't you dare mock the voice. It's kind of in limbo. It's strange because, a lot of developing market brands are buying prestigious Western marks to give them sort of a shortcut into getting credibility. So Geely bought Volvo and Tata bought Jaguar and Land Rover, and it's an easy way to, you know, if you have a brand that's not very well known outside of, say, India or China, you buy an established brand in the West and it's a shortcut.
Yeah.
And you would have thought Saab, being a pretty famous brand with a pretty loyal following, would have been a natural, you know, solution for a lot of brands to buy.
Definitely.
And it hasn't really worked out that way. Nobody seems to want Saab. It's getting drop punted from brand to brand to brand, and it's getting money here and then losing money there, and it's kind of in limbo, and it's been that case for years now. And it's sort of, you keep thinking just when it's about to come back from the dead and do something, it just kind of dies again.
I know. But this week it was like dead for a little while, then it got resurrected again. You know, they're still kind of working out what's happening. And look, it's just very sad. I'm just very saddened by the sullying of the Saab name.
It seems like a slow death in a lot of ways.
And it's just,
well, what do you do? I mean, someone's obviously thinking, maybe we can still make money out of it. There's, you know, there's all the manufacturing there, and we've got all the parts and the tooling.
Well, it is. It's all set up and Trollhättan.
Trollhättan.
Yes.
I just want to talk about subs, so I do love Trollhättan.
Yeah. Well, look, nobody really thinks this is going to work, do they?
I reckon someone might.
Yeah. I hope
not
so.
Me.
I'm filled with hope, but I don't know who.
No, it'd be great to see Saab rise from the ashes once again, but, you know, you got to wonder.
We'll see. We'll see. Now, boys, there was this other very sexy thing that came out this week, the Renault Racer, this RS01 Racer.
Oh, I love this
sexy
thing.
It is beast.
It is so sexy.
Yeah.
I think I think Fian's getting... Do you want a moment, Fian?
I need a little moment.
Do you want a towel?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
No. Back in a moment.
But this thing looks absolutely brilliant, but... Yeah. Renault was saying that it's not going to be any form of production car. It's not based or anything. This is just a racer for a one-make race series Europe? Somewhere in Europe, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, the way I initially saw it is you take a Renault Megane RS, one of the coolest hot hatches ever, flatten it a little bit like a pancake, stretch it out a bit, make it look a little like an Audi R8, and you've got this hot, sexy French sports car that just, oh my God. It's getting me very excited.
It is. I want to touch it.
I need look to it up on Google.
I need to tip like a cold shower over you, Fian, I think.
Please.
He's getting a bit cold.
Renault RS01. Yeah. Please have a look at some photos of this. I think it's very hot. And let us know what you think. If you think I'm completely out of my mind.
Yeah.
But this is probably one of the hottest cars I've seen in a long time.
Now, on the flip side of one of the hottest cars you've ever seen, the Moscow Motor Show was this week, guys.
Bring it back a little.
Bring it back a little. We've seen quite a lot of cars from, you know, we've got Lada. Lada are trying to make a bit of a comeback.
Is that where you put your food, in the Lada?
It is. It is. It's also a Russian car maker. Now, we must remember from the 80s, the 90s, we had it here. We had the Neva, four-wheel drive. I remember
my neighbour
had
one.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Lada Samara.
Peter Brock was very heavily involved in a lot of
smart.
There's actually a really interesting thing coming out of the Moscow Motor Show, which is the fact that the Neva, not the Lada Neva, but the Neva, which has a very strong Australian history, as you mentioned, once again has an Australian history, I guess, recreated.
Yeah.
Because the new one, so Lada is now owned by a Russian company called Autovats, which is in a joint venture with General Motors. And General Motors has basically designed a successor to the famed Neva, and it was penned by an ex-Holden staffer, but more importantly, the show concept car that's in Moscow was fabricated and made and created and then shipped to Russia from Melbourne.
Yeah.
Melbourne made.
There's only two places in the General Motors universe that can actually make concept cars for motor shows. One's in Detroit at home base, and one's in Australia in Melbourne. And Melbourne made it. So the Neva connection remained strong. In the 90s, it was Peter Brock's engineering firm making convertible Nevas and Neva Utes and Samaras that were hotted up and all sorts of things. And this Lada, sort of Lada anyway, connection is reaffirmed.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no chance in hell this car will come to Australia because Holden's too busy selling Traxxas and selling a developing market.
Yeah.
Neva isn't really going to cut the mustard.
But it's a shame because it's pretty awesome. Doesn't it look great?
There must be a couple of Lada fans out there listening to this show. I know where you're hiding, Neva fans. Well, the Neva is back and Holden's helping out, which is good news.
Yeah. If you're a Lada fan or if you had a Lada in the past, we'd love to hear from you. Does the Lada still exist? Is it still going? They can text in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you.
Creep.
A little bit. But so it's been, I think they had a few other concepts there. I think they're showing a couple of production models. They're really, really on the up and up Lada. I mean, I don't know whether that will happen outside of Russia and those kind of territories.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Russia thinks about it? Gay radio station talking about its projects.
I wondered that.
Do you think
funny.
The Russians
don't
are into
go
that?
Political on us?
No. Do you know what? It's funny you say that because I thought, oh, imagine if they ever did come back here. I would boycott them and I would have a small protest. Yeah.
Woo. I find there's something alluring about a Russian car.
Do you?
Or what it is. Haven't driven one yet, so maybe that's still yet to be fleshed
I think
out.
Why you find
that? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So that's
there's
it.
An allure. I'm looking at this, this Neva that's been designed in Melbourne and. It's a great-looking little, you know, it's a compact SUV, and it looks fantastic.
It looks all right, doesn't it?
I'd have one.
But there's, a few other things at Moscow. Datsun, as we know, is back.
Nissan Datto.
Very excited to have Datto back.
They still haven't brought the 20Y back, though, so I'm not interested.
Can you imagine if they do?
Or if they
put some kind of Y letter in a car name.
IDX. There's a concept that's going to be built soon that could be a little bit of a new age 120Y.
Yeah, but, it's not going to be called the Datsun.
No, it won't. But you can peel the sticker off and then get a little paintbrush.
Be one of those people.
Yeah.
Put them on.
Awesome. Sicko, excuse me. Awesome.
Awesome sickness. But look, Datto, they had a couple of cars at said show as well. And it brings up an interesting point, boys, because there are a lot of these car makers now having entry-level brands. So this is Nissan's.
And, of course, a sister brand, Renault, has Dacia.
Yeah, brand, which is kind of almost becoming less entry-level now. That's kind of creeping.
Well, I was in Europe recently, and I saw 16 Dacia Dusters in one day.
Really?
In Austria, which is a developed country. It's incredible.
This is the thing.
There is a demand for cheapo Polvo Pack cars. Yeah. The issue from Australia's perspective, though, is there's already 60 brands in Australia.
Well,
they can't really handle any more, unfortunately.
And I mean, that brings up a question. Could we ever see, like, let's say, you know, a couple of other brands died here or whatever, and somebody thought, oh, let's try this here. I mean, are those entry-level brands that are a bit cheap, they're not as safe as a lot of other cars, do they even work in this country? Do Australian punters want that kind of car?
Well, you have a look at the Chinese brands at the moment, so Great Wall is a good example. The sales have died because for a while there, when cars were more expensive, they had a real price advantage, and it was, well, it's half the price of everything else. Even if it's a bit crappy, it's okay. But now people are kind of waking up to the fact that if I'm going to spend a lot of money on a car, I may as well spend a bit more and get something decent that isn't going to kill me and my family, because these cars, they don't meet the standards that are required. They're not even close. And in developing markets, there aren't expectations or requirements for safety that there are here.
Yeah.
And we should frown very heavily on cars that, you know, are brought here that don't meet the requisite requirements. And Datsun, as much as we love the name Datsun, it kind of fits that bill.
It does. Which brings me to my next question, though. I guess I don't understand. I feel like car makers feel that it's okay to build these cars and send them to emerging markets. It's cheaper. Obviously, you know, safety equipment costs a lot of money to put in your car. I get all of that. But I just can't help but feel that they might think, oh, I don't know. Look, maybe I'm just being some kind of humanitarian dick. But I think it's not like those lives are worth any less than the lives in Australia.
Taking customers for granted.
A little bit. I don't know. What do you think? Do you know what I mean? I just don't think it's fair that places like Mexico, parts of Latin America, parts of Southeast Asia get these cars that are absolute death traps.
They are, but the way I see it is that maybe average wages are a lot less and they simply cannot afford to buy something better. And so they're offered a vehicle where in the past they would have only been able to have a scooter or something like that, and they go, oh, okay, I'll get myself a little Indian Tata Nana. Or
that is one way to look at it, but I would really like to see how expensive it is to put six airbags in a car.
Yeah,
I mean, Renault or Volkswagen or these big corporations, like the amount of airbags they buy from companies such as Takata, which is they source airbags from third parties, it can't be that expensive. You know, when you're talking millions and millions and millions of airbag modules around the world produced every single year, they can't be that expensive.
No.
Making engineering a body shell to be a little better. It doesn't really require a whole lot more. The grade of steel might be a little higher, but it mostly comes down to design. If we're talking things like radar-guided cruise control and all these technologies that prevent crashes in the first place, they're expensive. You could argue for them not being in it. But basic safety features, surely we have to put a line in the sand here. And surely it's up to the governments of developing markets to say, hey, our people aren't any less important than people in the West.
Yep.
Give us at least some basic safety
requirements. That's what I think.
And that's where bodies like ANCAP and NCAP and all these safety testing bureaus are crucially important. And it's why they need to broaden into developing markets more than they are.
Yep. I think so too. I think it's... And look, I think there'll be more pressure from some of those countries' governments eventually, but I don't see it happening.
But do you remember when no one really gave a crap about safety in Australia as well?
Yeah.
Like, safety has sort of become a concern only in the last sort of decade, I suppose. There were, 'cause cars in the 90s weren't safe at all. No. Most had no airbags.
No.
All of them were, you know, the body shells were fundamentally flawed except for very high-end German and Swedish cars, and it wasn't really a big concern. It's become one.
Absolutely. And as it should be. And then we're seeing bodies like ANCAP, who is the Crash Safety Authority here, really pushing, like, car makers who get 5 stars, the maximum score you can get for a crash safety rating. But if it doesn't have this autonomous braking thing, then they'll charge you for it and kind of go, well, I mean, yes, you've done well on this, but why don't you have this autonomous braking? Like, it's really interesting. They're just keeping on pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I kind of thought, oh, maybe that's a bit cheeky, but you know what? I don't think you really can put a price on safety, I think, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. No, well said.
That's my rant for the day, guys.
Anyway. Good rant, Tim.
Very good.
Look, we've got a lot more coming up on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, so please make sure that you stick around. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Yes, 94.9? Wow, I had to think about that. Tim, Mike and Fian here with you for the next half an hour
Good
or
afternoon.
So.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Now, we've had a texter. Somebody's texted in about larders a little bit earlier, guys. Who's texted in? Nurse James. Hello, Nurse James.
Hi.
You're doing a good job, James.
You are. We take
Saving
our hats
lives.
Off to you.
We do.
Hi, guys. I had a larder in the 80s. It had a lot of extras as standard, even back then. Adjustable intermittent wipers, cup holders, lights that beeped when key left in the ignition. It was very heavy. I did love it a bit.
See, people who had larders really, really love larders.
Yeah.
I work with a guy who had a couple of larders and is just the biggest larder fan ever, and it's awesome. It seems to be a car that inspires an unusual amount of passion in the people that had them, probably because they were so quirky and strange and left of centre.
Yeah. They had a lot of character.
Yeah, and tough as nails. You know, tough as nails they were.
Nice. Now, we also had a caller. Somebody's called in a little bit earlier. We were just discussing safety issues with cars sold internationally in emerging markets, and I think somebody might have misunderstood what we were saying a little bit, potentially about ADRs and cars coming to Australia that are dangerous, and we were certainly not talking about cars in
Every
Australia.
Every car that's sold in Australia has to meet minimum standards, and they all do, with the exception of some grey imports, which is another issue altogether.
Yep.
Any car sold here officially has to meet basic ADR requirements. We were referring to cars sold in developing markets, places such as China and India and Brazil, for instance, where cars that are made there would have to be re-engineered to meet standards for Australia. So if there was any misunderstanding, and to get serious for a moment, that's what we were referring to.
Yep. And if you've got any other queries about that, text in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Now, moving on from safety. Well, we'll never move on from safety. We are very safety-minded.
Safety first, guys.
Safety first.
Safety-minded.
Exactly. Practice safe driving.
Exactly. Well, a little bit more fun safe driving. So, Mike, you've been playing around with a couple of little saucy numbers this week?
Yeah, there's sort of a question that you hear a bit, which is, you know, I've got about 40K. I want a hot hatch. I want a car that's sort of practical but not too big, isn't, you know, fundamentally flawed in terms of, you know, the amount of space that I can fit in it. It's got four doors. It's got a bit of punch.
It's got to be practical.
But I don't want a Golf GTI like everybody else. And there's not really many options. A Ford Focus ST, I suppose, but it's still a Ford Focus. It's a great car, but it's a bit, you know, it's a Ford Focus. Everyone has a Ford Focus. So what do you get if you want something that's a bit different, a bit quirky? It might be a flawed vehicle, but it's certainly going to raise eyebrows and get attention. And
the only stand out from the crowd.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Correct. And the only two real options there are the Alfa Romeo Giulietta Quadrifoglio Verde, or QV for short, or a newly launched Renault called the Megane GT220. That's really it. If you think about it, in the hot hatch market, you've got tiny ones such as the Polo GDI and the Fiesta ST. You've got a lot of sedans like the WRX. You've got three doors like the Kia Proceed GT. But four-door hatches, that's really it. There's not a whole lot out there.
That's true.
So I thought, well, since the Renault has just been launched, why not put them up against one another? Now, there is an updated Alpha coming early next year, maybe later this year with some new multimedia. But it basically looks the same as the current one, so no time like the present. And I guess both of the cars, you can't say either of them are as good as a Golf GTI. Really, nothing is as good as a Golf GTI. We kind of harp on about the Golf here, but
it's
true.
They're hard to beat. They really are.
But if you walk out of your house in the morning and you see an Alfa Romeo in your driveway or a Renault Megane in your driveway, it stands out. It's unique. It's weird. It's different. It's kind of quirky. And that's kind of what a lot of people want.
But how do they drive?
Well, to keep
terribly?
No, actually, pretty well. They're, Renault has 162 kilowatt, Alfa has 173, which is...
That's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power for a small hatch.
That's plenty of herbs.
They both pull, they both do pretty well. They've both, you know, got similar equipment to a Golf GTI. The Alfa's missing a few bits. The update will change that. The Renault is a sharper tool. Undoubtedly, on a twisty road.
I've heard that about you.
Hello. A sharper tool. Is that an insult or a compliment? I'm not sure.
A compliment.
Bit of both.
If we're talking about driving as a fit-for-purpose vehicle, if we're going to try and tackle twisting roads and sharp corners and do dynamic driving, maybe track stuff, the Renault pantses, is that a word?
I think
it is now.
The Brits use it.
The Alfa's really more of a kind of warm hatch with a bit more punch than you'd expect. Yeah. Sort of a bit softer sprung. Its body control isn't quite as good as the Renault's.
But people might like that. There's a little bit more comfort
in the
way.
Well, that's the thing, because you drive the Renault around the city over tram tracks and it rattles your fillings in. It is so needlessly firm. And Renault's are often this. The RS is that, but at least the RS is ludicrously fast, whereas this one's a bit pared back. It's a bit slower.
Yeah.
It's in between, and it's ridiculously sprung. It's far too firm.
Now, with the Renault update, it's got a new, fresh face now. It looks quite appealing, I think, the Megane. Does this GT220 still come in a wagon? Because I know they launched that last year.
It does. Yep. So this is just a hatch version of that. And for another $1,500, you can get it in a wagon.
I would totally get it.
Give me the wagon.
Which is what you want.
Give me the wagon.
And the wagon's so underappreciated in Australia. There's another thing to talk about right there. The fact that everybody buys SUVs and nobody buys wagons.
Fools.
Both of these cars, they're both 6 or 7s out of 10. They're not amazing. You know, the Focus and the Golf were both better. But a lot of people, you know, it's more about the image that a car puts out for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and that's totally cool.
Yeah.
If you define your personality through your car, something Italian or French is a whole lot more interesting than what everybody else is in.
It is. And look, I'm a big fan of that little Giulietta. I haven't driven one in a while, but one of our colleagues from another publication, who is the lovely friend of Fenderbender, Nathan Ponchard, just had a long Giulietta for quite a while, like quite a few months, and he just loved that thing. Like, he was obsessed with it.
Our car advisor, I work, we've got a long-termer Giulietta as well.
Yeah.
QV, Quadrifoglio Verde. Yeah. I love saying that. It's just a fun sentence to say.
It's got a teeny tiny four-leaf clover on it.
It does indeed.
Which is pretty cute.
We've lived with this thing for about 3 months now. And it's one of those cars that's got so many flaws, like all the Italian cars do. But for some reason, because it's an Alfa, you just kind of put up with it.
Yeah.
You just let it.
Can you learn to love those flaws?
But that's the thing
That's part of the character?
That's precisely the thing. And the Renault's the same. It's got heaps of flaws, but you end up enjoying it and liking it despite them. In fact, maybe because of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as they're reliable enough, and in the modern age, that tends to be the case. There is an argument that a car that's romantic and has a few flaws is almost preferable to a car like a GTI, a Golf, which is Teutonically perfect, but doesn't lack a bit of character. So what do you do? Do you go for the thing with the character or the thing that's just perfect in every way but maybe leaves you a little empty inside?
And I think that's really personal preference. I think
it is.
And that goes across, you know, all segments and all kind of markets of cars. I know when the premium compact car explosion with the Mercedes-Benz A-Class and the new Audi A3, all that kind of thing. Out of all of those, that and the BMW 1 Series, I think I'm a bigger fan of the Volvo V40. It's just a little bit different. I love a bit of a Swede.
I just drove one of these. They are cool.
I loved it. I would have that in a heartbeat over any of those other little cars. And you know what? It might not be better overall, but there was something I connected with that car a little bit more than some of the others. I don't know.
And that's the beauty. If anyone's looking for a car, looking to buy a car, always take a car for a test drive because it's the best thing you can possibly do.
Yep.
Get in it, feel what it's like, push all the buttons, you know, fiddle with every little feature.
It's also worth understanding, like, if you read a car review, and all of us here write car reviews, we have to look at cars objectively. So I will say, for instance, that this Golf is a 9 out of 10 and this Alfa is a 7 out of 10. I would have an Alfa.
Because it's
an Alfa. Yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because a car is worse, it's not better as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really important as a car enthusiast, that a real car enthusiast should understand that.
Yep.
Can you call it X Factor? What do you call it?
I don't know what you call it. Maybe charisma. Charisma in people's lives. Some people are just charismatic and you don't know why, and some cars are the same.
Yep. Yes. I agree. So a bit of a thumbs up for both of those little ones and, very, very cute little players. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We've got about another 18 minutes of fun time, so make sure you stick around. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. My name is Tim. I'm here with Mike and Fian on this beautiful, beautiful Saturday afternoon.
G'day.
Boys, we've had another call in just to clarify a couple of things regarding... So we were talking about safety before and safety with cars in the 90s compared to cars now. And I think maybe we were saying that vehicles that are built today, there's a bit more of a focus on safety than there was in the 90s. Not saying, of course, that there wasn't
focus. We were of the opinion, and this is purely us expressing an opinion of our own memories of the time, but that there seems to be a real emphasis on safety now in terms of the active safety technologies, the preventative safety technologies that are being employed that perhaps there wasn't. We were never implying that cars in the 90s were built deliberately unsafely and that there weren't people putting in all the effort in the world to make them as safe as technology would allow at that time. But it's also not wrong to state that modern cars are not safer than cars of the 90s, because in general they are.
Yeah.
So if there was anybody who took offence to us in some way and they felt that we some way implied that nobody cared about safety full stop in the 90s, that wasn't the intention.
No.
It was simply that there perhaps is more of an emphasis now, which is a positive thing.
Yeah.
It was in the wider context of talking about safety groups such as ANCAP pushing for safety to a bigger degree now, and that cars are safer now than they were in the 90s.
Yep.
No offence was intended, and if any was taken, we do apologise.
And look, I'd suggest if you've got any further issues with it, email fenderbender@joy.org.au. We can follow it up that way. In other news, we've got a couple of other fun texts coming through, boys. Is that right?
Indeed.
What have we got there, Fian?
We've got a text from Ali in Cheltenham who says that we were talking about quirkiness and cars not being great, but them having more character. And Ali says, reliability is overrated. Quirky cars have so much more soul. I have a TVR, much maligned for reliability and build quality, but I'd pick it over a Porsche every time as it's just so much more engaging, faults and all.
A TVR.
Well said,
I used to know
Ali.
I imported TVRs there. Yeah, they're insane cars.
British sports cars.
But it's an experience owning one, isn't it? Because, maybe they do have reliability issues, but damn, they're exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also had a text from a Daryl who said, did you know that Henry Ford said that every time I see an Alfa pass by, I tip my hat?
That's
isn't that a
cool.
nice quote?
That's really
That's
sweet,
lovely.
Isn't it?
And it's a perfect encapsulation of what we were saying. Henry, who was famous for developing the people's everyman car of its day, the reliable, unbreakable, basic car that everybody had, and yet even he appreciated the sexiness and slinkiness of an Alfa Romeo that may not have made a whole lot of sense, but damn, you loved it anyway.
Yeah. It's true. Very, very true.
It's a fantastic quote. Thanks for sending that in, Darryl.
Definitely. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, and now, Fian, you have had a couple of weeks of international travel. Of course, I saw you in Japan. We got to drive the Mazda 2, which we did have a bit of a chat about last week on the show. But before that, you were in England for something quite quirky.
I was. Mm. I was in England for a thing called the GT Academy, which is run by Sony and Nissan. And basically, people who are very, very good at the video game Gran Turismo post a time, and then they go in through various training courses, and the best of the best get to fly to Silverstone.
Ooh.
There were six Aussies there competing in a field of about 30 international competitors, and basically, if you win, you get a global racing contract with Nissan. So you go...
That's
you
crazy.
Know, some of the previous winners have raced in Le Mans and things like this, and it's phenomenal how successful this is. They've got about an 80% strike rate.
From a computer game?
Yeah, video gamers make excellent drivers, say the Nissan
really?
Boffins. Yeah, because they have focus and concentration and...
Yep.
And all this sort of
stuff. The military is also doing this.
Yeah.
In America, if,
US Army.
If kids are particularly good at certain video games,
really?
Like Call of Duty and military games, the military is actually, it's a fast track into fighter pilot school.
What?
Yeah. So people who say that, I'm not personally a video gamer, and it's not like any elitism thing, I just don't enjoy them that much. But anyone who says that video games are irrelevant, point to those things and say, hey, being a good gamer can actually get you places. You could be a fighter pilot or a Le Mans driver.
That's crackers.
This sort of segues into Critical Hit, which is up next, I believe.
That's correct.
One of my favourite Joy shows.
Excellent show.
But anyway, I'll cut to the chase. So these guys were very good at video games, and they basically got to drive some very fast cars around Silverstone circuit in the UK. So they drove Nissan 370Z Nismo sports car, and also the GTR Nismo, which I was lucky enough to have a fang in as well.
I'm drooling a little bit as you're saying this.
It was
epic. This is basically this is the you know, the Porsche 911 killing supercar that Nissan built. Twin turbo V6, you know, 400 kilowatts. This thing's insane. And then Nismo comes along, which is like you know, AMG is to Mercedes. They come along and they go, yeah, we'll put an extra 40 kilowatts and 50 newton meters, and we'll stiffen the suspension, and we'll put adaptive dampers in it. They did all these things, and it makes a fast car absolutely insane. This thing is a proper supercar.
What's the 0 to 100 time on that?
They wouldn't tell us. The regular one is 2.7 seconds. They reckon this one might be 2.5.
That is stupid.
That's Bugatti Veyron speed.
That makes my head spin.
Yeah, and it was interesting because the day I got to drive it, it started raining very heavily, and then when I got in, they said, "Oh, this is the only GTR Nismo in Europe." I said, "Oh, that's good. There was two, but the other one got crashed." Oh, yeah, I'm not very nervous anymore. I'll just tiptoe around this wet racetrack. But
no pressure for
you. Oh, mate, the grip this thing generates. Mm. You just drive it like a race car. It was phenomenal. My heart was beating, and it was just one of the best things I've ever done.
Really?
If you're super rich, go out and buy a GTR Nismo, even though they're not out yet.
Immediately. So. Oh, yes. Very, very fun. We're exciting.
We're hoping could be next year.
Mm.
When they come to Australia.
Yeah, Nismo.
Nismo, yes.
Yeah.
So they bring out a few
models. They keep kind of saying, yes, maybe, we're thinking about it, are we? Yeah. I think they'd be crazy not to. They really need a brand boost. Yeah. Nismo's the way to do it.
But this car, it just... Yeah, I can't.
Flawless.
I could talk all day about it, but yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, Fionn, so we can no longer talk about it. But thank you for joining us. It was good to have you, and hopefully we'll see you again very, very soon.
Pleasure as always.
Mike Costello, thank you very much for being here as well, please.
You are most welcome.
Yeah, and I say we just go outside and get into that sunshine, guys.
It's a beautiful day.
What do you reckon?
Get some vitamin D.
Exactly. Do stick around. As Fionn mentioned before, Critical Hit with Luke and the boys is up next. It's all about gaming, and it's very, very fun. Then Hannah is with you for Little Fish a little bit later on. My name's Tim Nicholson, signing off for Fender Bender for another week. Safe driving.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.